This is the 2010 West Coast Daughters of Sarah. Our theme this weekend has been the spiritual habits of sisters of a sister in Christ. We've had our brother Roger Lewis leading our studies. This is session number 15, entitled Lydia, the Spirit of Gracious Hospitality.
Well, good morning.
Morning.
We're missing out on a session this morning, which was to have been on the matter of how to find fulfillment in the role of a sister. But perhaps the study we're about to do will help to cover that very subject anyway by means of both exposition and exhortation. Because I think that Lydia is one of those hugely inspirational examples of someone who did manage to find fulfillment in her sphere of labour in the truth. And you'll remember going back to the story of Eve and to the things ordained in the Garden of Eden and those particular talents that man and woman were blessed with, that they might in those several capacities outwork their responsibilities before God, that the woman was endowed with gifts that would allow her to offer the spirit of nurture and support. And we're not going to have time now to explore just how wide that capacity can be. The only thing I can say, and this applies not just to sisters but to brothers also, that the breadth of what we can do in our own sphere that God has ordained is only limited by our own thinking. There is no limit to what we can do in our labours apart from what our own minds see the capacity to be. And no brother or sister should imagine that their work is constrained or limited, that somehow there's not enough for them to do to be satisfied in the work of the truth. I don't think that can ever be the case. We're limited only by our thinking. So here's a good example then in the story of Lydia, the spirit of gracious hospitality, of just how one woman could so profoundly affect those around her, and in particular, how one sister could engrave her spirit upon her entire ecclesia. Now, we're told about Lydia in Acts chapter 16. In fact, this is the only place where Lydia will appear in the divine record. So one might imagine that there's not a lot to say about Lydia, really. But as with so many of the stories of the Bible, in particular those characters which the Bible reveals to us, they are obviously in the providence of God, revealed to sufficient detail that we might draw understanding and exhortation from them. And I think Lydia is such an one. That at first sight, what appears to be perhaps not enough suddenly blossoms into a whole story that's just tucked away, you see, in the narrative, as so often is the case. Do you remember that proverb? It is the glory of God to conceal a thing, and the honour of kings to search it out. The honour of kings and queens. And both brothers and sisters rejoice in searching out those hidden treasures. And I think, by the way, there's a reason why God's done that as well, because he's hidden the very best things underneath the surface of the scriptures. Those that are arrogant and those that are proud and those that are scornful and those that are profane never see those treasures, do they? Only those who read with such passion and zeal and care and diligence ever hear the secret stories of the scriptures. No one else hears them. Maybe God designed it that way, so that only when we really give our hearts and minds to the things of the Word are its treasures finally revealed. Well, here's such an one. Now, you see how the story unfolds in the matter of Lydia in Acts 16. We're told in Acts 16 and verse, maybe starting from verse 6, because there was a puzzling episode in the life of the apostle. The record says in verse 6, when they'd gone throughout Phrygia and the region of Galatia, they were forbidden of the Holy Spirit to preach the word in Asia. Clearly what they had decided to do is to make travel plans into Asia, And by whatever circumstance it was, they were clearly told, clearly instructed by some means, that they were not allowed to go and preach the word in Asia at that time. So they said, oh, well, let's go somewhere else then. So verse 7, after they were come to Mysia, they essayed to go into Bithynia. And yet again, the record says that the Spirit suffered them not. No, you can't go here either. Can we go to Asia? No. Can we go to Bithynia? No. Well, the apostle was a man that was always conscious, acutely conscious, of the hand of God upon him. In fact, of the hand of Christ upon him. Paul believed that Christ directed his life directly, day by day. Very conscious of that. And so, verse 8 says that passing by Mysia, they came down to Troas, and now finally Paul receives the answer that he must have been waiting for, is, well, where do we go then? What do we do next in the preaching work? And verse 9 says, a vision appeared to Paul in the night, and there stood a man of Macedonia and prayed him, saying, come over into Macedonia and help us. And after he had seen the vision, immediately we endeavoured to go into Macedonia, assuredly gathering that the Lord had called us for to preach the gospel unto them. And you might know that the word we in verse 10, that little wee tiny we, is the clue that Luke, who's writing the Acts of the Apostles, is with Paul on this journey. When they come into Macedonia, we indicates that Luke is travelling with Paul on this journey. But the record's going to change in Acts 17, verse 1, because the record will say, now when they had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where was a synagogue of the Jews. And that little change from we, where it says in Acts 16, verse 10, we endeavoured to go, verse 11, we came with a straight course, verse 13, we went out, that we is the indication that right through to the journey that brings them to Philippi, Luke is travelling with the apostle. But when the apostle leaves Philippi and goes on to Thessalonica in Acts 17 verse 1, Luke says they went, which means not me. And I believe that Luke stayed behind in Philippi for possibly the next 7 years, but rejoins the apostle later on in Acts chapter 20, when Paul is going to go back to Jerusalem to present the Jerusalem Poor Fund. And we know that because all of a sudden in Acts chapter 20, the record says in verse 5 of Acts 20, these going before tarried for us at Troas, and we sailed away from Philippi, says the record. And that sailing away from Philippi suddenly tells us that Luke has now rejoined the company of the apostle. In between, he's been at Philippi all that time. So I can tell you one man, one brother, who knew the Philippian ecclesia inside out and back to front, because he was a member, and that's Luke. Luke knew the spirit of this ecclesia. He belonged there. Oh, and just one more thing while we're in Acts 20. Did you notice this? It says in verse 6, we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread and came unto them to Troas in 5 days. So that little trip across the water, which separates the region of Asia Minor from the coast of Macedonia, took 5 days to travel from Philippi to Troas. Now come back to Acts chapter 16. You see, it wasn't like that when they journeyed to Philippi on this first occasion. It was almost as if the Spirit of God was urging them onwards. Because you see what the record says? It says in verse 10, reading again, Acts 16, after he had seen the vision, immediately we endeavoured to go into Macedonia, assuredly gathering that the Lord had called us for to preach the gospel unto them. Therefore, loosing from Troas, we came with a straight course to Samothracia, and the next day to Neapolis, and from thence to Philippi, which is the chief city of that part of Macedonia. They arrived in 2 days. It took them 5 days in Acts chapter 20, verse 6, to sail in the opposite direction. But on this occasion, it's almost as if the Spirit of God blew the boat across the sea. And the boat simply blasted across the top of the waves just as quick as it could get there. We've got to get to Philippi to preach the gospel. Almost as if the Spirit was urging Paul on this journey to get to this place at this time. And having got to Philippi, Acts 16, verse 12. Verse 13 says that on the Sabbath we went out of the city by a riverside where prayer was wont to be made, and we sat down and spake unto the woman which resorted thither. Of course, what happened is, in any city of the Gentiles, If there were not 10 Jewish men, there couldn't be a synagogue. So perhaps the indication is that at this stage in Philippi, there was such an insufficient number of Jewish men that there was no synagogue present, or no synagogue there that they could resort to for prayer. So what had happened was they'd found a place by the riverside where they would go and offer their prayers. The diglot says, where was allowed a place of prayer to be. And we sat down and spake unto the woman which resorted thither. And it says, and a certain woman named Lydia, a seller of purple of the city of Thyatira, which worshipped God, heard us, whose heart the Lord opened. Now, isn't it an absolute paradox what happens here in this story? Do you know why Paul has come to Macedonia? Because a vision of a man of Macedonia arrived to him saying, come and help us. And when he gets there, it's not a man that he meets, it's a woman. And she's not from Macedonia, she's from Thyatira. But she's the right person, absolutely the right person for Paul to meet in this story as the beginnings of the Philippian ecclesia get underway. This woman is going to be the foundation member of the ecclesia of Philippi, the very first one. In fact, there's going to be three foundation members, it would seem, of the Philippian ecclesia that will be unfolded to us in this story. First, Lydia. Then the damsel possessed with a spirit of divination in verse 16, and then the jailer of the Philippian jail who's baptized in verses 31 to 33. So these are the first three converts. But of all of those, Lydia will be first ranked in her order of importance and in her order of conversion. Oh yes, a certain woman named Lydia comes into the life of the Apostle Paul as he preaches the truth in Philippi. It says she was a seller of purple. The Revised Standard Version says she was a dealer in purple goods. The New English Bible says a dealer in purple fabric. Jerusalem Bible says she was in the purple dye trade. Of course, purple was very expensive in those days because it was made from a certain special type of shellfish, and they had to crush them in order to get a very small amount of purple dye. And so it was a very expensive process. So if you bought or sold purple clothing, you were dealing with expensive luxury goods. And she obviously had to have stocks of this. And the strange thing is, of course, about her is that she actually doesn't come from Philippi at all. She comes from Thyatira, which is a city of Asia Minor. And presumably she may have a house back there as well, but she's got one in Philippi. And not only has she got a house, but the record says in verse 15, she's got a household. So she's got servants. She's got household members. She's got people that probably help run the shop and the business. This is a wealthy woman. She deals in purple. She's a woman of considerable substance, is this woman Lydia. She's running her own business in Philippi, perhaps another one in Thyatira, with a whole household that owe their living and their support to this particular woman, a great woman indeed. And yet the record says, for all her greatness and for all her business expertise and for all her wealth, when Paul comes and preaches the gospel, she heard it gladly. In fact, the record says, whose heart the Lord opened, that she attended unto the things which were spoken of Paul. Funny thing, isn't it, how circumstances in life come upon us. This was a providential meeting, I believe. Paul was intended to meet this woman at this time in her life. And this woman was providentially in the right place at the right time, when the right man came with the right message and turned her life upside down. And isn't it lovely how, in fact, what must have happened is that Lydia heard the truth and was convinced of the preaching. But that's not how Acts describes it. Acts says, whose heart the Lord opened. I suppose that's true in the end of all of us, isn't it, really? None of us are quite sure about the mysteries of how God works in our lives and how providence unfolds. But as Luke writes up the story later on, he says that the Lord opened the heart of Lydia. Not just that Lydia believed, but that the Lord opened her heart. He worked in her life, you see. He brought her into this circumstance, and she attended unto the things that were spoken of by Paul. Now, here's what it says, verse 15. When she was baptized, or because she was, you see, straight away. You know, just one of these women that without hesitation heard the truth, said, "That's it, that's for me, I want that." So she got baptized. And she didn't just get baptized, oh no, that's not for this woman. The record says when she was baptized and her household. So whoever Lydia was, she was a woman of such passion that it wasn't good enough for her to be baptized. She had to preach the truth to all her household members. The whole lot of them were baptized. The Philippian ecclesia began with the whole household of one lady. She preached the truth to the lot of them. She was just one of those wonderful spirits and personalities that bubbled over with her enthusiasm for the truth. And before you knew it, the whole of her household were glad and joyful members of this little fledgling ecclesia in Philippi. And she says, she besought us, saying, "If ye have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come into my house and abide there." And she constrained us. Lovely spirit, by the way. Is she a wealthy woman? Yes. A woman of substance? Yes. A woman of ability? Yes. A woman of influence? I think of considerable influence. And yet what she says when she invites the Apostle Paul into her house is, "If ye have judged me to be faithful to the Lord." So not only was she a woman of ability, but she was a sister of humility. "If ye have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, if I can be counted upon as a faithful sister in Christ, if that's true," she says, "do come and stay at my house." Now, it's an interesting thing, because just hold your hand in Acts 16 for a minute and come back to the Gospel of Luke in chapter 10. Because I think that the decision of Lydia to invite Paul into her household was, in fact, a fulfillment, whether conscious or unconscious, of something the Lord had said. Do you remember how the Lord sent out 12 first and then 70? 12 disciples and then 70? The 12 were sent to preach the truth to Israel. That's why 12 were sent. But who were the 70 sent to in Luke's Gospel in chapter 10? Well, the number 70 is the number of the Gentiles, the number of the nations. And I think it's quite clear from reading Luke chapter 10 carefully that the 70 were sent out to be the preachers of the gospel to the Gentile world. And we know that because of certain peculiar features of what Luke 10 says. And so this is what he says to the ones he sends forth. Verse 3 of Luke 10, "Go your ways. Behold, I send you forth as lambs among wolves. Carry neither purse nor scrip nor shoes, and salute no man by the way. And into whatsoever house ye enter first, say, 'Peace be to this house.'" Actually, I misread that, didn't I? "And into whatsoever house ye enter, first say, 'Peace be to this house.' And if the Son of Peace be there, your peace shall rest upon it. And if not, it shall turn to you again. And in the same house remain, eating and drinking such things as they give, for the laborer is worthy of his hire. Go not from house to house. And into whatsoever city ye enter and they receive you, eat such things as are set before you." Oh, now why did Christ say that? Eat such things as are set before you. Why would he need to say that if the preachers were only going to Jewish houses in Israel? But the command of Luke 10 verse 8 envisages those preachers who will travel into the Gentile world, who will be faced with food to eat that Jews might not ordinarily have eaten. It's the Lord that first teaches that all meat is clean and to be received with thanksgiving. Even though the Apostle Paul will give instructions on the matter of meat later on, it's the Lord himself that gives counsel that when his preachers went forth into the Gentile world, they were to eat such things as were placed before them in whatever city of the Gentiles they came. And what the record says, you see, is, well, you see what it says in Luke 10 verse 7, that when they came to a house, if peace was there, if they had fellowship and tranquility there and acceptance, they were to go into that house and they were to stay there. Don't move around. Go not from house to house. Stay right there. In fact, you see what it says? In the same house, remain. Ah, now you see that word remain? That just happens to be the very word that Lydia uses in Acts 16 verse 15 when she says, "If ye have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come into my house and remain here, abide there." It's the same word as Luke's gospel. That was the very counsel of the Lord. When you go into a strange city, Be prepared to eat what they put in front of you, whatever they generously give. And once you've found the house of peace, stay right there. And that's exactly what Lydia says. She fulfills the very words of Christ. Come to my house and remain there. And into this Gentile place and into this household in Philippi, the Apostle Paul now comes. And he will indeed, we believe, remain there throughout the length of his stay at Philippi. Remember how we said in an earlier study that I suggested it was a really good idea to think of a spiritual role model to follow, to think of some woman of the Bible that inspires you. And I suggested that there were many women in Scripture who themselves had found a woman that inspired them. Would you like to see who the woman possibly was that inspired Lydia? Well, it's interesting what Paul says. Well, Luke, actually, who's writing the record. But Luke says this in verse 15. Did you notice that he uses two words to describe the invitation that Lydia gives to Paul and his company on this occasion? We've got to picture the scene. It says in verse 15, when she was baptized in her household, she besought us. Now, you see that word besought, it's a lovely word. It's the word parakaleo in the Greek. Does anyone know what parakaleo means? To what? Yes, to entreat, to call along one's side, is the literal meaning of the Greek. To call along one's side, very soft and gentle word, parakaleo, to entreat. It's a lovely word, really. So you see, I think how the story began is that Lydia says to Paul, look, Paul, it's been so lovely to have you preaching here. I've just so rejoiced to understand the truth. Why don't you come and stay at my house while you're here at Philippi? I'd love you to come and stay with us. She besought us, says Luke, writing up the story. Parakaleo. She called us near to be alongside. Come and stay in my house, said Lydia. Can you hear that? I can see that story. Now, would you like to know what Paul said in reply? Well, I think what Paul said, I can't prove it, of course, but I think what Paul said was something like this. And I think there's some biblical evidence for this, which we're going to come to very shortly. I think Paul said, look, Lydia, that's very kind of you. So nice of you to offer. But, you know, I sort of tend to make my own arrangements as we travel around, and we try and find our own lodgings in the city somewhere so that we're not a bother to anyone, and we're free to come and go as we need to go. In fact, I've got things I need to do in terms of preparation during the night for the work of the morrow for preaching. So, look, it's ever so nice of you, but we'll get something sorted out. Lydia says, look, he says, I've got room. I've got space aplenty in my house here. Plenty of rooms. Do come and stay. Paul says, look, it's absolutely fine. In fact, Timothy's down in the street at the moment right now, just finding a place that will be suitable for us. She says, I'm not hearing of this. You're coming to stay with me right now, she says. Here's your bedroom, here's your towel, and dinner's at 6 o'clock. And I know that she said that because you see what verse 15 says. It starts by saying she besought us, parakaleo, she entreated us. But at the end of the verse, Luke writes with astonishment, she constrained us. And that word constrained in the Greek, parabiatsobai, means to force or to compel contrary to nature. Luke says, it's just unbelievable. We were sitting there, Paul said no, and next minute we're sitting in our bedrooms. I can't believe it. She just wheeled us into the house and said, I'll hear no more of this, thanks. You're staying with me. And that's the end of the matter. And Luke writes with astonishment at the generosity of this woman that simply swept them into the house. Ah, but where do you think that spirit came from? Well, hold your hand in Acts 16 and come back to an interesting passage in the Old Testament record, because in the 2nd of Kings chapter 4, we're told of another great woman of Old Testament times, a woman of influence, a woman of substance, just like this great woman of Philippi. And the record says in the 2nd of Kings, and chapter 4, verse 8, it fell on a day, as most things do, it fell on a day that Elisha passed to Shunem, where was a great woman. Oh, and you see what the record says? And she constrained him to eat bread. Ah, I wonder where that passage comes from in Acts 16. She constrained him to eat bread. See what the margin says? She laid hold on him. She grabbed Elisha by the scruff of his neck and pulled him into the house and said, eat this bread. She compelled him. It's the very same idea in the Hebrew. And so, in fact, what she said, verse 9, she said unto her husband, behold now, I perceive that this is an holy man of God, which passes by us continually. Let us make a little chamber, I pray thee, on the wall, and let us set for him there a bed, and a table, and a stool, and a candlestick, and it shall be that when he cometh to us, he shall turn in thither. And it fell on a day that he came thither, and he turned into the chamber, and lay there. And every time Elisha came through Shunem from then on, there was a little house in Shunem where he came and stayed, because there was a great woman who constrained him with her hospitality. And Elisha, the man of God, was glad. And don't you think that's the very spirit of Lydia? When the man of God comes to her place in Philippi, and she makes a little place for him, and constrains him to eat bread. And Luke, writing up the story, just happens to use a word which I think catches a Bible echo from a great woman of the past, who might have been the very inspiration for the spirit that Lydia showed. Interesting, did you see the record in 2 Kings? Verse 9. She said to her husband. See, it wasn't the man that saw the need, was it? It was the woman. It was the great woman of Shunem that saw Elisha's need. The man wasn't perceptive enough. This is the spirit of nurture and support. It was there in the great woman of Shunem. She saw the need, she did something about it. She constrained the man of God to come and stay. And now Lydia, in the New Testament record, is going to show exactly that same wonderful and marvelous spirit. Perception to see the need and a willingness to reach out and to help. And so the apostle finds himself in a little house in Philippi, and the gracious spirit of an hospitable sister who cared for him so graciously and so well that I personally believe, prove me wrong if you can, that every time Paul ever went to Philippi again, you just somehow feel that that was the little house where he'd go and stay, don't you think? Do you remember how Christ had a little house in Bethany where Mary and Martha made great suppers for him? Well, here's Paul's little house. Not in Bethany, but in Philippi. And Lydia is his Mary and his Martha. In fact, here's another interesting connection, Acts 16. If you come back to the Gospel of Luke in chapter 24, do you remember the story of the journey to Emmaus? It says that there were two disciples travelling with the Lord, and they were so entranced by his conversation, by his spiritual words, by his language, by his unfolding of the scriptures, so that they became, well, so that the scriptures lived in their ears. In Luke 24, the record says, in verse 29, verse 28 for connection, they drew nigh unto the village whither they went, and he made as though he would have gone further, but they, this is interesting, isn't it? They constrained him, saying, abide with us, for it is toward evening. And he went in to tarry with them. And it came to pass, as he sat at meat with them, he took bread and blessed and brake and gave to them. And their eyes were opened, and they knew him. They constrained him to abide. That's the same idea, isn't it, as Acts 16. She constrained the apostle to abide in her house. Come and abide with me, she says. And you know what she really did? She invited the Christ of the Gentiles into her house. Just like these two had done on the road to Emmaus. And no doubt, as the apostle Paul broke bread in that little house, Lydia's heart burned within her, as Paul expounded the gracious words of Scripture in just the same way that Christ had done in a little village earlier on in time. Lovely, isn't it, how those little connections of Scripture are woven together. You know that Paul preferred, he really did prefer, to be not chargeable, if at all possible. He didn't like to depend on other people. This is the only woman, I think, he ever allowed to do this for him and with him and to him. Lydia was the only person that Paul allowed this to happen for him. Because such was her spirit, such was her lovely overflowing spirit of generosity, that he just couldn't help but end up in her house. In fact, you see how this record, of course, you know what happens. He's taken into prison, isn't he? He's beaten with many stripes. He sings hymns with Silas in the jail, but it's all pretty bad the way the story turns out in Philippi in terms of Paul's sufferings. In fact, see how the chapter ends. It says in verse 37 that Paul said to the jailers, to the Romans, "They've beaten us openly uncondemned, being Romans, and cast us into prison. And now do they thrust us out privily? Nay, verily, but let them come themselves and fetch us out." And the sergeants told these words unto the magistrates, and they feared when they heard that they were Romans. Why do you think the Apostle Paul stood on his dignity on this occasion and said, "No, let them come and fetch them us themselves. We've been beaten uncondemned as Romans. You've broken the law." Why do you think Paul made such a fuss about that? Do you think that was for himself? No, I don't think so. I think he did it to give some breathing space to the little ecclesia that he was going to leave behind, that it wouldn't be touched by the authorities, you see. He put the authorities on alert that they could be in trouble, that they'd broken the law, to give some space to the ecclesia. And before he left Philippi, you see what the record says, verse 39, "They came and besought them and brought them out and desired them to depart out of the city. And they went out of the prison." But they didn't go out of the city, not straight away. They entered into the house of, why? Surprise, surprise, Lydia. "And when they had seen the brethren, they comforted them." The Revised Standard Version says they visited Lydia. Rotherham says they went unto Lydia and seeing the brethren. And I think that the clear implication of verse 40, even though the words of the house are in italics, the clear implication of verse 40 is what, do you think? That the ecclesia of Philippi is now meeting in the house of Lydia. You see, she just couldn't stop herself, could she? The whole meeting's meeting at her place now. That's where they've got the breaking of bread, in Lydia's house, which was common in other places too. Many of the early ecclesias began life somewhere in somebody's household. But somehow, you just know, don't you, before this chapter even finished, that somehow if there was going to be any house in Philippi where the ecclesia might meet, well, you just know, wouldn't you, that it was going to be Lydia's house. And so it was, says verse 40, as Paul leaves that place. Now, you might think that that's the end of the story, but it's not really. It's actually, in a sense, only just the beginning. Because that's the only time and the only place where Lydia's mentioned in the record, but I think her spirit lingers on well beyond Acts 16. Now, here's why. If you come to the book of Thessalonians, to the second of Thessalonians and chapter 3, by the way, it was to Thessalonians that Paul went as soon as he left Philippi. Left Philippi, comforted the brethren, went into Lydia's house, and then marched straight on to the city of Thessalonica, when he was going to preach the truth there as well. But if you come to the second of Thessalonians, we're told this in terms of what counsel the apostle gave to the little ecclesia in Thessalonica. He says this in the second of Thessalonians and chapter 3. And perhaps verse 7. "For yourselves know how you ought to follow us, for we behaved not ourselves disorderly among you, neither did we eat any man's bread for naught, but wrought with labour and travail night and day, that we might not be chargeable to any of you, not because we have not power, but to make ourselves an ensample unto you to follow us. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any man would not work, neither should he eat. For we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, working not at all, but are busybodies. Now them that are such we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work and eat their own bread." You see where the apostle says in verse 8, "we wrought with labor," that word "wrought" is the same word translated "work" in verse 10, "working" in verse 11, and "work" in verse 12. "We worked to eat," said the apostle, when he comes to Thessalonica. So even though the ecclesia might have offered him some form of assistance, he wouldn't take it from them. Why? Because there was a problem in Thessalonica with some that weren't prepared to work for a living. Paul says, "I can't take money from these people. I need to be an example." So it says that he wrought with labour and travail night and day. You know, one of the amazing things about Paul, do you know what he did? He preached the gospel all day and he sewed tents at night. Imagine that. Preaches the gospel all day, sews tents at night. And the sewing of the tents wasn't just to provide money for himself, it was to provide money for food and board and lodgings for him and Silas and Timothy and all those that were with him. Such was the example of the Apostle Paul. Ah, but while he was there in Thessalonica, even though he wouldn't take a penny from the Thessalonians, he did receive a gift from someone. And you'd never guess where that gift came from, would you? Well, if you come to Philippians chapter 4, we're told that whilst he was at Thessalonica, about 120 miles onwards from Philippi, something interesting happened. Because Philippians chapter 3 verse 16 says, "For even in Thessalonica ye sent once and again unto my necessity," says Paul. So when Paul is in Thessalonica, he won't accept money from the ecclesia itself, but he does receive a gift 120 miles down the road from why? The ecclesia of Philippi, where Lydia dwells. And not just once, but twice they sent to help him in his time of need while he was preaching the truth down the road in Thessalonica. Ah, that was the spirit of Philippi, you see. They were a generous ecclesia. But where did that generous spirit of Philippi come from? I think one particular sister in the meeting, don't you? Oh yes, I think so. The spirit of the founding member of the ecclesia. Not only was Lydia having the whole ecclesia meet in her house, but I'm sure it was Lydia who was the guiding spirit that said, let's package up a little present for Paul, shall we, and send it down to the road to the Thessalonians whilst he's there. Twice. Do you think Lydia's hand was in that? I think so. And now come to the 2nd of Corinthians in chapter 11. Because later on, as Paul travelled through this region, he came through Macedonia and down into Achaia. And in the 2nd of Corinthians in chapter 11, the record says this. He says in verse 9 of 2 Corinthians 11, maybe verse 7 for connection, "Have I committed an offence in abasing myself that ye might be exalted, because I have preached to you the gospel of God freely? I robbed other ecclesias, taking wages of them to do you service. And when I was present with you and wanted, I was chargeable to no man. For that which was lacking to me, the brethren which came from Macedonia supplied. And in all things I have kept myself from being burdensome unto you, and so I will keep myself." Now, when Paul went to Thessalonica, he wouldn't accept gifts. Why? Because there was a problem with people not working in the ecclesia. But now he's at Corinthians, and yet he still says he wouldn't accept gifts. He didn't want to be chargeable, but this time it was for a different reason. When he got to Corinth, he felt that he couldn't accept any gifts from the Corinthians because there were some in Corinth who had accused Paul of actually stealing from the bag. Paul was collecting money for the Jerusalem Poor Fund, and there were some in the ecclesia who'd been so cruel and so hateful and so unkind and so malicious as to suggest that Paul was embezzling from the contributions. So Paul said, there's just no way, absolutely no way that I can take money from the Corinthians. So he sewed tents at night again. And he was actually in desperate need at the time. Mind you, he got some help, didn't he? Because it says, see verse 9, "That which was lacking to me, the brethren from Macedonia supplied." But actually it wasn't all of Macedonia. It wasn't all the ecclesias of Macedonia that helped him out at all when he got to Corinth. In fact, there was only one single ecclesia that helped him when he was at Corinth. And you'd never guess which ecclesia that was, would you? Only one ecclesia sent gifts when he was in desperate need in Corinth. And that ecclesia was the ecclesia of Philippi. Now we know that because if you come back to Philippians chapter 4 again, and this time read verse 15, the record says, concerning his experience in that place, Philippians chapter 4 and verse 15, He says, "Now ye Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no ecclesia communicated with me as concerning giving and receiving, but ye only," he says, "just you, just Philippi, only Philippi helped in sending a gift to Macedonia on this occasion, sorry, to Corinth on this occasion, when Paul was in such desperate need amidst the Corinthians." And you see, the lovely thing about that, when you stop and think about it, is if he felt that he couldn't take money from the Corinthians, that he absolutely couldn't be chargeable to them, why would he receive this gift from Philippi? Why would Paul even accept it when it came? And the answer is, because it came with all their love and with no strings attached. Because it came with the spirit of Lydia, and a whole ecclesia that was filled with her spirit of generosity, with no requirements of indebtedness back in return. And the Apostle Paul knew that this was the one place, the one ecclesia, where he could safely receive that money and it would not be used against him. So he gladly received that gift. Now, shortly afterwards, he writes the second of Corinthians because he's trying to finish off the collections for the Jerusalem Poor Fund. And if you come to the second of Corinthians in chapter 8, we're told this concerning the Jerusalem Poor Fund. It says this in verse 1. "Now, you brethren need to know about the grace of God that was bestowed upon the ecclesias of Macedonia, how that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality." Now, if ever there's a set of conflicting statements, it's 2 Corinthians 8, verse 2. How do you think this works out in life then? "How that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy..." Isn't that amazing? "Out of the great trial of their affliction, they had abundance of joy, and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality." That's astonishing. In other words, this ecclesia, this place in Macedonia, all the ecclesias, including Philippi, had nothing to give. They were at this time struck with the grip of famine and poverty that had come upon them, and yet out of nothing they gave the most. How did they do that? These ecclesias that were bereft of everything at this time in Macedonia, including Philippi, he says they gave the biggest contribution of all to the Jerusalem Poor Fund for the poor saints in Jerusalem, and yet these saints in Philippi were desperately in need themselves, but out of nothing they gave. Amazing, says Paul. I want you to know about the spirit of the Macedonians. Ah, but here's the key, verse 4, and I'm reading from the Revised Standard Version, because this is how it should be translated. "This was the spirit of the Macedonian ecclesias, including Philippi, where Lydia comes from, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints." They didn't just give in Philippi, they begged the favor of being able to contribute to the needs of others. They begged for the favor of being able to be generous to others. Can you hear the spirit of Lydia there in Philippi, encouraging the ecclesia to give their contribution? And verse 5 says, Revised Standard Version, "And this not as we expected, but first," and here was the key, how come they gave so much and gave so well? Ah, because first they gave their own selves to the Lord. And then he says, "and to us." Who do you think he's thinking of when he says that? These ecclesias in Macedonia gave themselves to the Lord and to us, he says, by the will of God. And Paul knew what he meant when he said that these ecclesias had given themselves to him, because that's what Lydia had done in Philippi. Do you know why I know that Philippi is at the very heart of that? So here it is. When Paul promoted the Jerusalem Poor Fund, Philippi responded wonderfully despite desperate poverty on their part. One of the reasons why I think that Philippi was at the very forefront of that collection in Macedonia was that when Paul gathers the delegates together to take them down to Jerusalem for the presentation of the Poor Fund, there are two delegates from Achaia, there are two delegates from Asia, there are two delegates from Galatia, and there are, surprise, surprise, four delegates from the Macedonian ecclesias that will travel with him to take their gifts from their respective ecclesias. And one of the delegates that will travel with the Apostle Paul back to Jerusalem with the gift of his own ecclesia is Luke of Philippi. Oh, yes, the Philippians were part of this response. And I think that's the spirit of Lydia behind the scenes, you see, in the gracious response that they received. And now once more, if you come back to Philippians chapter 4, of course, by the time Paul actually writes Philippians, he's in Rome. And not only is he in Rome, but he's in jail. In fact, he's depressed in spirit, no doubt, because he's cut off from the support and care of all his friends. And the record says in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 10, "But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at the last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein you were also careful, but ye lacked opportunity." You see that word flourished in verse 10? It's a word in the Greek that means those spring flowers that burst into blossom on a tree that otherwise had seemed dead. Like a dead tree come back to life again. And here's Paul in prison. Can you just picture the scene? He's in prison, depressed in spirit, in Rome. He doesn't know what the future holds. He's in privation. He's in suffering. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, a brave, brave man called Epaphroditus managed to get his way through the authorities into the prison to bring what? To bring a gift, a present to the apostle in prison. And you'd never guess who the gift came from, would you? It came from the little ecclesia in Philippi. When he was depressed in spirit, he was cheered by another gift from Philippi. It wasn't that they didn't want to do it, it's just that they hadn't been able to get through to him, and now all of a sudden they had. They got through at the last. And Paul has a little package that he opens. He could just tell that Lydia's hands had tied the strings. The only place it remembered him was Philippi. And this is what he says. Verse 12. He says, "Look, I know how to both be abased and how to abound everywhere, and in all things I'm instructed both to be full and hungry, to abound and to suffer." I've been through all these things, he says. I know what it's like to have nothing and to learn to be content with that. I can handle that. He says, "In fact, I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me." But you've done well. You've well done that you did fellowship with my affliction. "Now ye Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no ecclesia fellowshiped with me as concerning giving and receiving, but ye only. Even in Thessalonica ye sent once and again unto my necessity, not because I desire a gift, but I desire fruit that may abound to your account. But I have all. I abound. I am full, having received of Epaphroditus the things which were sent from you, an odour of a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God." Rotherham says, "A fragrance of a sweet smell." And I believe that when Paul unwrapped that package in his prison cell in Rome, what he smelt in particular was the fragrance of the loving generosity of one sister above all others. Because I think that Lydia drove all of that. And I think we know that that's right. I think I can prove that. That what he smelled was the fragrance of Lydia and her lovely spirit for the truth. Do you know how we know that? Come back to Philippians chapter 1. Verse 3, Philippians 1 says, "I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine for you all, making request with joy." And why I do this, he says, is for your fellowship in the gospel, from the first day, he says. Ooh, now who's he talking about in Philippians 1 verse 5 when he talks about their fellowship in the gospel from the first day he ever met them in that place? Who's the first convert? Who's the first person he speaks to? Who's the first house he goes into? Who's the first person that touches his life in Philippi with her fellowship of the truth for Paul? It's Lydia, isn't it? And I think that when Paul says that in Philippians 1, verse 5, I thank God for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now, I think that that, in Philippians chapter 1, is the Apostle Paul's salute to Lydia, his dear friend, who sent gifts to be with him wherever he was in the world. Marvelous, isn't it? Her fragrance filled the whole of her ecclesial house, like the odour of the ointment did in John chapter 12. And I think that's such an inspirational story, you see, because we don't have to be wealthy. We don't have to have Lydia's resources. We don't have to be sellers in purple to show the same attitude. We just have to have that spirit of nurture and support that sees the need of others and reaches out to touch them. Isn't that the spirit of Lydia's life? But I think what Lydia did is she did it according to the very best of her ability, the best of her capacity, the best she could do in that spirit, you see, to stretch forth her hands to those that were in need in the spirit of nurture and support. Do you think this sister found fulfillment in her role? Oh yes, I think so. She engraved her spirit upon the whole of her ecclesia. She becomes the benchmark of excellence that Philippi stands for. And of all the ecclesias that Paul ever travels to in all his life, I think he loved this little ecclesia, the best and the dearest of all, because of their closeness to him. And that spirit began with one sister whose name was Lydia.